At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
They were alive until someone decided otherwise. You're tuned in to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring defense attorney and host of the podcast, Defense Diaries, Bob Mata.
It is out, the documentary Diddy, Making of a Bad Boy on Peacock, and it is raising a lot of eyebrows, to say the least. Very specifically, a lot of allegations coming out in this one, not in any sort of criminal or civil sense. Right now, it's just individuals speaking up. Al B. Shore, who was once the partner of Kim Porter. Kim Porter also once the partner of Diddy. Making the accusation of murder was the case, saying that the death of Kim Porter, a 47-year-old who we knew was otherwise healthy, dying of lobar pneumonia overnight, that there's more to it, and he is on a quest to expose it. Again, all accusations. Joining me to discuss, Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. It's quite a stretch. We've gone from, you know, all these sexual assault allegations and the charges against him federally and civilly, and now murder. I'm wondering where this is going to go. It's kind of a big deal if you're saying this out loud on television, is it not?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. I mean, look, you and I, from the minute the story dropped, thought we were just tip of the iceberging. So, you know, but for a company like NBC, which obviously owns Peacock, and their lawyers, their team of lawyers, to give an okay to run with something like that,
yeah,
you know, because they vet the hell out of it. You know, I mean, I've done enough like Dateline and that type of TV to where I know that they run everything by their lawyers because they're always worried about liability. Mm-hmm. And for them to just say, hey, go for it, is pretty telling, man. Like, I mean, yeah, they must feel pretty secure about the information that they're getting, that they're willing to release it publicly and theoretically exposing themselves.
Well, you know, so exposing NBC and Peacock, I mean, yeah, Diddy's in jail. He doesn't stop him from suing somebody for defamation. Right. But it goes far. And he even goes into hinting at that there might have been a hit on his life. He fell surprisingly ill, was almost going to be sent to hospice recently when he started talking out against Diddy and starting to talk about the case and started talking about Kim Porter. Suddenly he almost died. And he's pointing out, look, there's a lot of people in this world who coincidentally, seemingly, fall ill or die, who know a lot about Diddy, who have the potential to talk or who have started talking. And that's a point he's trying to make really strongly.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, look, you and I are both, we're hesitant to dive head in, like just full on into conspiracy theories. But man, this thing, the tentacles that this thing has is stunning, you know? And it's like, it's just so much money and so much power that, I mean, you can't really rule anything out, can you? I mean, it's like people will go to insane lengths in order to protect themselves. And when you have the kind of assets and power and leverage that Diddy has or had, I mean, it's hard to know, you know, I mean, anything's possible, you know, and it's like, you kind of get that vibe of like every unsolved, you know, murder that, that kind of happened randomly throughout the United States. Everyone wants to kind of pin it on Israel Keyes. I'm starting to kind of get that sense that anybody that dies that was on Diddy's orbit or in his orbit, you know, they're going to look at it hard. Like, okay, did he have something, especially if they're for the most part healthy, you know, and it's like a sudden unexplained death. I mean, Diddy is going to be on the radar because that's what people think of him at this point, that he's just this nefarious Dr. Evil mastermind that will stop at nothing to protect himself, you know? And yeah, it's an unbelievable story. And I haven't even watched the doc yet. Yeah. So I'm dying to watch it.
There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of Diddy docs out, but there's a lot in this one. I would say more than anyone else, more than any of them that have been out there yet. This one really gets to the heart of the matter with some people who were very, very close to the situation. There's certainly some people in there who have been removed, but at one time were very close to Diddy. And that's where it gets really interesting, where it talks about his childhood and talks about his upbringing and what life was like. He went through some trauma early on. His father was murdered. His mom then fell into some money, and he lived quite a nice rich kid life. He was known as the rich kid, wearing nice Cartier watches, good clothes. He was the kid people wanted to have the money of, but it didn't necessarily make him fit in on the street so well. And he always felt like an outsider, we learn in the documentary. We also learn about his drive then to try and be accepted, to try and be one of the cool kids, or trying to be what he wanted to be, which seems to be kind of an ongoing theme throughout his life. It seems that drive was created back then by, I guess, feeling like he's not enough, even though he had so much. But it kept going, where gonna get more stuff, but it feels like this is someone who's always been chasing validation.
Yeah. And I think that that tracks, you know. I mean, if as a child you kind of felt like the outsider and you were shunned socially speaking, I don't know that you get over that. Like, you know, I mean, especially because you're talking about your most formative years, you know, in terms of development. And like, I don't know that, especially if he decided never to get any kind of psychotherapy, delve into that. And he just kind of tried to deal with it on his own and figured, well, the money and the power is going to be able to get me to where I want to be as far as social standing. But you have to wonder if that there was like deep seated animus that was just under the surface, you know what I mean? Like where he was always like, oh, these are the same suckas that shunned me back when I was a kid, not literally, but figuratively, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like these were the popular kids, you know what I'm saying? It's like that had to have been festering in his mind. I mean, you don't forget about those things as you grow older. I mean, that's like you said, that became part of his fabric, you know? So when he gets all that money and that power, you know, that's going to be a pretty viable explanation as to a lot of the things that he's done over the last year since he gained that. So how did his mother come into the money? Did they get into that?
It had something to do with the death of the father. I don't know all of the exact details of the money, but it was there. I don't believe it was criminal means by any stretch of the imagination, but had the money. I don't know if it was a settlement or if it was a insurance payout or something, but the money was there. Wow. It gets very interesting in the documentary talking about his mother's influence on him in Diddy, The Making of a Bad Boy, which is now on Peacock. Specifically, there's a piece in the documentary, and it's not huge. I was expecting it to actually have a little more content to it, considering the buzz that was around this. But it's really only about a 2-minute section of the documentary. And it talks about his childhood, of the home that he lived in. They had basically kind of like an up and down duplex. They had some friends that were living downstairs. They were in the upstairs part. They kind of just shared it together, helped raise their kids together. And the other child who grew up with Diddy in that duplex speaks on the documentary about kind of what life was like, almost being a brother to Diddy. And his allegations are very telling, and it does add up. It doesn't necessarily excuse anything, and not at all excuse anything, but it certainly gives you the recipe for Diddy. Allegations are that when he was a kid, mom was having parties all the time. There was a lot of drugs, alcohol, pimps, prostitutes, and apparently mom, it's described, and I'm just paraphrasing here, as mom had kind of her little posse of girls that she would bring over for Diddy and his friend to keep them happy.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, what? I can't even imagine this concept of, can you imagine being a teenager and your mom's like, hey, Bob, I brought these girls over for you. Go have fun. Shut your door in your bedroom. Don't be too loud. It'll be fun. I mean, that's just speculation and that's the allegation. But my God, that would mess with your mind. If you're like a 13, 14, 15 year old and this happens and you're a boy, you're probably not going to say no. And you don't necessarily understand how unhealthy and the damage that's going to do to you later on in life and how that's going to warp your mind on sex and your view on women. But if those allegations are true, kind of makes you understand the recipe of what Diddy is doing now.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. It's like you can go one of two ways like that. I mean, if you know anything about Richard Pryor, and if you've ever seen that movie JoJo Dancer, Your Life is Calling, which was kind of thought to be autobiographical to a certain extent about Richard Pryor's like life. Mm-hmm. His mother was a sex worker, and you know, he grew up in the house where they, you know, were sex working. Mm-hmm. And you know, that like, that was his life growing up. It sounds like it was like probably sans the money part of it. Mm-hmm. But you know, I mean, Richard Pryor obviously blossomed into a fabulous career as a comedian, but he certainly had a ton of issues. Mm-hmm. with addiction. And you know, I mean, we all remember when he caught himself on fire or set himself on fire and he's running down the street and, you know, he seemed to rebound. So I guess you can go one of two ways, but yeah, I mean, the damage from that type of circumstance being raised in it is really kind of impossible to wrap your mind around unless you're raised in that type of situation. I mean, psychologists can try to go, you know, delve into people's minds that were raised in a situation like that to try to figure out where they ultimately landed. But unless they're able to do it at the time that it's taking place, it's hard to know just what kind of impact that it had on that person psychologically, because you're looking at it typically as the end result and what, yeah, what was left in the wake of, you know, the damage that was done. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's what we're looking at with Diddy, right? I mean, we're looking at, you know, we're trying to figure out what we're always trying to figure out in every type of like horrific case, whether it be serial killers, why did you turn out like this? Like if you get money and power, you can do one of two things. You can either do good with it or you can do bad with it. And you know, I mean, that question of why, if either way, whether, you know, you had a wonderful upbringing and you were taught, you know, to be a moral and good person, and that just kind of sticks with you throughout the entirety of your life, and everything that you do is to try to help humanity and try to help other people. Or in the alternative, you know, it, like you were saying, that this is a situation where he grew up working or were with his mother who was working or not working, whatever she was doing in that house. But you know, there was a very strong sense of sexualization. There was a very, that there had to have been a strong sense of misogyny going on in there and just undervaluing women in general, you know, and treating them as objects as opposed to human beings. I mean, that had to have been just hammered into his brain. You know what I mean? And it's coming from his mother.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, that's what makes it really shocking.
I think that's, you know, if you're to examine it, and we're not psychologists, obviously, but we deal with a lot of stuff that involves psychology. So you got to kind of get a good grip on what you're dealing with. It's the person who, when you look at it on the surface, and if you don't know everything about the case, you go, he has a really tight relationship with his mom. I mean, we saw a video after the investigation began, after his homes were raided, where he was sitting there with his mom, kind of one of the last people still standing by his side was her. And you go, well, how could he be this monster and have this relationship with his mom? That's a total mind fuck. If your mom is the one that it allegedly instilled this disrespect for women into you, I mean, that's not a common thing. And that really could explain why if it's been enabled his whole life, he does not understand that it's wrong. Or if he does, it's so far out there in the ether outside of his norm, I don't think it penetrates his norm to make him realize, hey, I'm doing something wrong, until the rest of the world and the feds come knocking going, hey, what the hell have you been doing?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And it's like when you kind of piece together all of the things that we're learning in terms of him kind of being socially shunned and not accepted and always trying to fit in. And then you fast forward to his teenage years, which is all during his formative part of his life, when his mind is forming, his personality is forming, all those important things that we develop in our, you know, young, you know, toddler to preteen. And then through your teen years, you're learning different lessons throughout all those different periods. And then you kind of get a better understanding of what went wrong with him, you know, at least it seems to be that there's like an explanation. Now, does it justify it? Of course not. But does it explain it? It seems to, you know, because those are two different things. I mean, like, if I'm working on his sentencing, if he is in fact convicted, or if they decide to make a plea deal, you know, the sentencing in federal court is much different. Mm-hmm. You know, that becomes an entirely different experience for the defendant, because at that point your lawyer is really trying to negotiate with the government to get the best deal possible. Mm-hmm. And they dig into everything, man. Like they really, it's a very different thing than like state court. When you're talking about, like, if you've come to a plea agreement, you know, the sentencing memos in federal court are epic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you're really litigating the case. And that is where all of these things, if true, like, I would be going to Diddy and say, man, we got to bring this shit up.
Yeah.
Dude, look, I mean, this explains a lot, bro.
But do you think he will? Because that would involve throwing his mother under the bus to a certain degree. I mean, it would just be stating fact. I mean, I suppose one, and his mother could come back going, look, I made mistakes, I was wrong in doing this, but yes, this is how he grew up. I guess that could be a way of approaching it without, you know, looking like you're destroying your family.
Yeah. I mean, look, if your option is, your mother's going to have to lay on the sword a bit, mm-hmm. or you're going to murder people to try to keep shit quiet. Like, I'm going with the former, not the latter. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and I'm sure, like, look, she's not going to be able to, like, I was not aware of the money side of it, you know? Yeah. So I just made assumptions, which is wrong of me. You should never do that. But, you know, I just assumed that they would have struggled financially, as most people of color do, or have had in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, fortunately, we're moving away from that. But, you know, like, kind of taking that in and then trying to process it, well, like, okay, well, she's not going to be able to have the struggling single mother kind of story behind her. You know, I did what I had to do, which really kind of paints her in a much different light. Yeah. You know, because it's like, you know, I judge somebody very differently if they're stealing food so they can feed their kids because they're just not financially able to do it for whatever reasons. And there's some legitimacy that there's an actual moral reason as to why you're committing that crime. Like, I went into the store and I stole the food because my kids were starving. It's different if you're just being shitty and awful.
Yeah.
Just because you're shitty and awful.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're not Robert Durst going in for a sub.
Right. <You know? laughs> Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there is a huge difference there. Another interesting aspect of it is just kind of seeing the transition from that life of childhood into adulthood. It was really... It was kind of seamless almost, where he very, at a super young age, got in to Uptown Records as an intern and really just kind of started climbing his way up very, very quickly. He left that world of his mom, or even was kind of integrated into that world with his mom, allegedly, and then started kind of becoming Diddy very quickly in his early 20s, still, you know, pretty much a kid. And then that world continued on with, I guess, validation for all of these needs that he had. There wasn't ever really that moment I think some of us have when we leave childhood and leave our parents and leave the nest and go, who do I want to be? Who am I? When you separate yourself from what you were around as a child, hopefully not sex parties with mom, but you know, whatever you came from. He just kind of kept going and had the money and had the backing and had everybody saying yes to him going forward. So it really was never a time for reflection. It was just always reinforcing really unhealthy ways of living and unhealthy views of how to treat other people, it seems.
Yeah. And it what it also seems like is, you know, that his mother's clearly his ride or die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, and he never had that balance. Like he clearly never had that. Like he just was surrounded by yes people, you know, like he never had that person apparently just kind of in his ear being like, yo, man, you might want to reel this shit in. And if he did have that person, he wasn't willing to listen.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you can now kind of understand that his mother was continuing to enable him throughout the course of his life. You know, she had to have been aware of all the shit that was going on with him. You know, I mean, that's his confidant. I guarantee you there is no one that he told more to than his mother, you know? So, and if she's going to continue on her path of leading him astray, which she did, maybe wittingly or unwittingly, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I can't get in her brain when he was like, whatever possessed her to say, all right, you know, I'm gonna get my gal friends to come in and, you know, like keep my son busy.
Yeah, let me pimp up
while
my friends.
I do the things that I want to do.
Yeah,
you know, just to keep him occupied, and at the same time, I'll kill two birds with one stone. I'll turn him into a man. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you just it leaves you wondering, like psychologically, man, this thing is fascinating.
Yeah,
it really is.
With let's go back to the murder accusation that was made by Al B. Shore in the documentary. The fact that he's saying that out loud, and he's also saying that it's a legal process that's going on. He said he can't say too much about it, so he kind of left it at that. He said the murder of Kim Porter. Then he goes back and says, should I have said allegedly? Yes. The answer to that is yes, Al B. Shore. Good thing you did say that. But the fact that he's saying it out loud and that there is some sort of legal proceeding, as he alludes to, going on behind the scenes, there's nothing civilly charged here. There's nothing criminally charged here. What could be going on behind the scenes right now legally without there being anything filed in terms of a lawsuit right now?
Well, I mean, do you know, as you sit here, when did she die?
2018 was when she died. And there is a body, she's buried. She was not cremated. My question is she in the casket?
Right.
I would assume if you're Diddy and if something did happen that was unscrupulous, you might not want to have the body available for exhuming. But as far as we know, it's there.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what you have to do. Like, I don't know if an autopsy was done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, typically people of means, if they die suddenly, you know, without any kind of indication as to why, really, like typically, I think that they would want to do an autopsy. Somebody in the family would be like, you know what? Seems off. There's something weird about that. You know what I'm saying?
Don't believe they did. It was lobar pneumonia. And so she had been sick for a short period of time and then out of nowhere died. And everyone was very shocked by that. But I think that's what they chalked it up to. It's like, look, she had pneumonia. She was sick and she died. So I don't believe an autopsy was done. I don't think there's any toxicology that was done. 2018, you have a body. I guess depending on if something was used, what would still be present in her corpse, if it's still there, because there are ways of killing people that are pretty, you know, undetectable, if you will.
Right.
And, right. you know, you can do insulin. You can do a lot of things that could kill someone and no one's ever going to be the wiser unless they really look into it at right. the time of death. You get further out, some of those signs go away. So I guess it really depends if this was a murder, how was it done, if there was poisoning. The other thought on this is maybe there wasn't any poisoning. If, and I don't know the answer to this, but whoever was in charge of her care, if there was some sort of incentive not to give her the care that she needed or not give her the medicine that she needed or give her something else that she thought she was getting what she needed, that could kill you too if you're not right. being treated correctly. And then it looks no one's any the wiser because you literally had an illness kill you due to lack of treatment, which could be a possibility here too, which is that murder? I guess if your intent is for the person to die, it would be, but it'd be a sure. hard one to prove.
Yeah, it would definitely be a hard one to prove. I mean, you'd really have to. I mean, they essentially they did it with Tammy Daybell.
Yeah.
I mean, they exhumed her and you know, they kind of worked their way backwards after it became apparent of what was going on with Lori and Chad. You know, so I mean, it's essentially the same concept. But, you know, in terms of embalming and just the process of preserving the body for burial, like, I don't know how much that affects things. I mean, obviously, you'll have to pull the legal record or the medical records and kind of look to talk to the things that you're talking about, like her medical care. Like, was she treated in a hospital? You know, was she treated at home? Did she just go to a doctor? You know, did she have a regular physician? Like, all of those things, you know, and then you kind of have to look at, like, who made that determination that that was the cause of death? And then, you know, from the poisoning angle, I guess where you'd start is, you know, what type of, I guess, like what type of injection or drugs could you give somebody that would cause symptoms that were similar to pneumonia?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like you said, and I hate to keep hearkening back to Vallo, but you know, a lot of people think that Lori's brother, who was her henchman, you know, who a lot of people think that was the guy who was actually doing the killing for them. Mm-hmm. He suddenly dies mysteriously, yeah. you know, and a lot of people think the same thing that, you know, he was injected with something or he ingested something that ultimately killed him. You know, so it's like whether or not something's going to come of it is tough. I mean, obviously, as you know, T, you got to prove it in a court of law. It's one thing to speculate about it. It's a whole different thing to meet that burden of beyond a reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think what it does is even if they can't say, all right, well, Porter seems to be one that could be a victim. I mean, it opens the floodgates into looking into everybody yeah. around him. Like what we were talking about earlier, like anybody that dies, it was in his orbit. Like he's going to be looked at if it wasn't a death that was like, the guy just had cancer and was yeah. dying for 5 years. Like if it's a sudden heart attack, if somebody happens to fall in front of an L train,
yeah.
you know, like all the different ways that people,
yeah.
you know, typically don't die. And if they start dying and they're, you know, people that had knowledge about him and were in his orbit, you know, I mean, I think they're going to start looking at all of it, man. I mean, Jesus.
What does it say if because look, somebody is accusing you of murder and if you didn't do it, I think you'd fire back. I mean, obviously, he's already in a compromising position as it is. So I don't know if he will, but he's always been denying everything. But if somebody accuses you of murder, I think, you know, that would be grounds for a defamation lawsuit back at them. But here's the deal. If there is something to it, you probably don't want to file that defamation lawsuit because that would kind of open up the doors to discovery as to why these accusations are being made. And that would open up a lot of information you probably don't want to have come out.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't respond, I think that will be somewhat telling. If Albie Shore does get a lawsuit actually going, that could certainly open up some floodgates too. But I don't know that Diddy's necessarily running to respond legally to this accusation. Or is this a carrot on a stick that Albie Shore is throwing out there? Like, come on, sue me. I dare
yeah.
you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there's a couple ways to look at it. Number one, if I'm his attorneys, I'm telling them to shut the hell up.
Yeah.
Like I'm not letting them, like, I know you want to pop off. I know that you want to respond to this. We're not doing it. We're in the middle of a huge federal case, and they're looking to indict you on more stuff. So, like, he's got to just bite his tongue. He's just going to have to sit there. If Albie Shore files suit, like you said, and we've talked about this exact thing before in terms of the amount of information that you can get in civil discovery is vastly more in depth than you can get in criminal proceedings because of the Constitution. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have those same constitutional rights when it comes to a civil lawsuit, when they haul you in for a deposition. And, you know, I mean, the defense to defamation is, it's the truth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that then becomes the battleground, you know, where you're going to have Albie Shore and everybody else that they can gather that's got information coming out and firing. And Diddy's going to have to sit there and get deposed. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no avoiding that. If you're going to sit there and say that the guy's lying, there's going to be a deposition that's going to take place with Diddy, where he's going to have to sit there, and that is going to be the Inquisition. Like, mm-hmm. like no other.
Yeah.
Like, in a way that you can't be interrogated by police in a criminal case. That's what I'm saying. It really opens him up to just like an unbelievable amount of potential discovery and information flooding out, because, you know, they're parsing every single word, and it's impossible. It's mm-hmm. impossible when you're just every other word out of your mouth is a lie to keep track of it all. You yeah. just can't. Like, the only way that you can do that is by telling the truth, like, because you don't have shit to forget.
With exhuming a body, which, if I don't know, I'm not an expert in any of this, just from what we talk about here, I would think if you got Kim Porter's body tested, that would be a big deal, especially if something showed up in a civil case. What are the grounds to do that, and who has the ultimate choice of a body being exhumed? Would that be her kids, which would be, she yeah. has one with Albie Shore, she has a couple with Diddy, so you have some who may not be so keen on digging Kim up, or can a court order that if it's you're making these accusations? Look, we got to look at this. We have no choice. We have to. Or can that be stopped by one of the parties?
Yeah, I mean, all of those things exist in terms. Hold on. Sorry.
Sure.
All of those different things exist in terms of it would be the estate. It would be her kids, you know, her people. Mm-hmm. But her estate would be the ones, if they wanted to proceed and pursue it, they could be the ones that I don't even know that they need a court order. I mean, they might. If the family is saying we want her exhumed because we want to perform an autopsy to see what we can see, that's the easiest path. I mean, in terms of like the government coming in and saying we want to exhume the body, I mean, you're going to be confronted with that concept of it's a fishing expedition. We need probable cause to show, because you're essentially asking for sure. a warrant, you know, to exhume her and go conduct a search on her person. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's an interesting concept as well. And I don't know if they have enough.
Yeah. And that'd be a whole different type of case too. That would be criminal versus civil.
Right.
And we don't know where it's going to go, if it's going to go anywhere at all. And that's, he was very, very mysterious when alluding to what was actually going on behind the scenes legally. If it was civil or criminal, we don't know the answer to that question.
And I think the interplay that you were talking about is what's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on, like, if it turns into, okay, Albie Shore is going to file a suit against him for wrongful death, that's one thing. If Diddy turns around and files a suit for defamation, and then Albie Shore's lawyers say, all right, good, because this is what we're going to do. We're going to sue you back, and we're going to sue you for wrongful death. that opens the whole can of worms. Like at that point, you know what I mean? Like they could be waiting to see what his response is if something comes down the pike, whether it be a defamation suit or whether or not he's he being Albie Shore in the estate of Kim Porter is thinking about, all right, we want to move forward with the wrongful death, you know, lawsuit, which we saw again with, you know, Kim Goldman, you know, was it Goldman?
OJ.
Was that OJ's, you know, like her, like, and it's a much lower burden in terms of, you know, getting a judgment in a civil case than it is getting a conviction in a criminal case. So, I mean, those are all definitely possibilities, but like you're really trying to stick that carrot out there on that stick with them. If you're trying to draw them in, you know what I'm saying? So like, cause that's the way that I would look at it. If he files a wrongful death suit, you know, and there's going to be a lawyer out there that says, yeah, I'm all in, man. You know, like the potential payday on this thing's huge. And you know, kind of the notoriety that I can gain from bringing the suit, like he won't have a hard time finding a civil defense or civil plaintiff's lawyer to come in and say, yeah, I'll take a look at this. I'll mess with it. You know, so like how it plays out will be just another fascinating aspect of this case.
It keeps getting deeper and darker every single day. And who knows what's around the next corner. Literally, things could be unearthed. People could be unearthed.
Oh, I see what you did there.
The trail of destruction runs deep.
Yes, it does.
We'll keep following it right here.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Let's be honest. Nothing kills the thrill of a good murder mystery like a commercial for laundry detergent. It's like someone slapping a closed sign on your favorite dive bar. But you're not here for that, are you? You're here for the good stuff. So ditch the ads and upgrade to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get your crime straight. No chaser. Commercial free with extended interviews and early access. It's like getting the bartender's special when the bar's already closed. Search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and drink it all in.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.